decisions you ever make.
Edinburgh scientists have created a genetically modified chicken that produces important cancer-fighting drugs in its egg whites. The chemical found in the eggs is difficult and expensive to make in a lab. The Scottish team is the same one who created Dolly, the cloned sheep. The world's first test tube baby has given birth. 28-year-old Louise Brown gave birth to a healthy, naturally conceived baby boy in Bristol, England. Through an exhaustive study, scientists have discovered a new gene linked to Alzheimer's. The researchers say their breakthrough may help develop new treatment for the crippling disease. Healthcare advocates warn a White House proposal to save Medicaid nearly $4 billion in the next 5 years will cut financial assistance to rural hospitals and care facilities. The public has 60 days to comment on the plan. A recent AP poll shows 62% of Americans think they can tell a person's personality by what kind of car they drive. 37% of those polled say their car has a personality of its own. Honda announced it will build a second factory in India. The price tag, $200 million. Honda says India's booming economy means more disposable income and an increase in vehicle demand. Time Inc., which publishes Sports Illustrated, People, and Fortune magazines, as well as Time magazine, is laying off employees and making other cost cuts. The moves are designed to give Time Warner more resources to devote to the Internet. Wall Street is closed today because of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Light sweet crude is trading at $53. There's more on QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, and a happy Martin Luther King Day to all of you out there. Of course, this day is the 78th anniversary of the birthday of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and today is devoted to his life and his legacy. So what do you think about Martin Luther King? What is his particular legacy? What do you think still has to be done in his dreams? To answer the questions, I've invited one of today's great leaders. He has been a community activist in D.C. for 15, 20 years or so. He actually comes from the same high school that I do in Nashville, Tennessee, but has been in Washington long before I. His name is Mark Thompson. And he is my co-host on XM Satellite Radio on Friday afternoons. Those of you that get XM, I can listen to us on the Power, Channel 169, between 4 and 6:30 p.m. on Fridays, Eastern Time. You can correct that for your local time zone. But as I said, Mark Thompson's been in radio and has been a community activist for decades now. And I want to welcome him here to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be with you. Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Happy Martin Luther King Day. Let's talk about Dr. King. You said on just last Friday when I was on your show on Make It Plain on the Power that Dr. King was one of the greatest American leaders of, or maybe world leaders, of the 20th century. Tell me this. There are civil rights leaders, of course, at the time of Martin Luther King. There's a whole host of them we can name. And, of course, in past and present, there are leaders. What made Dr. King stand out from the others who, after all, were working very hard for many of the same goals?
Well, there were, if you're speaking of others who came before him, they paved the way to make his job even more successful. I was just reading today in one of Taylor Branch's books and watching on television, Vernon Johns, who was a forerunner of Dr. King, in fact, pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church before Dr. King took over in Montgomery. The word I like to use is continuum. Whoever came before Dr. King, whoever came after Dr. King, establishes and maintains a continuum of freedom struggle, of liberation struggle. It just so happened that Dr. King came along at the right time. Sometimes we are in the right time, in the right place. And as a matter of fact, Dr. King came along at a time when African Americans and their thoughts of themselves, their thoughts of their place here in America, was ever-evolving. If we remember, in 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education outlawed segregation. Well, just 1 year later was the Montgomery bus boycott. One might wonder whether the Montgomery bus boycott would have been as meaningful, as successful, if Brown versus Board had not come first. Well, for that matter, Vernon Johns had been in Montgomery laying the groundwork for Dr. King to come. Vernon Johns was ousted from the pastorate of Dexter because he was so inflammatory and he wanted to confront segregation in Montgomery. And the deacons didn't like that. The congregation didn't like it. They were a nice, safe, quiet church. But when Dr. King came, because of what Vernon Johns had done, they were able to accept Dr. King even more. In terms of the people that come after Dr. King, Mark, many of the people I think that come after him, many people that we might identify in leadership, I believe emulate many of the things Dr. King did. But the times are different. Things have changed. And he has and will always have such iconic status. I don't know that anyone will ever live up to that. And nowadays, people are a lot different. People are a lot more skeptical of leaders. People are far more critical. The media is as well. A lot of the things in the 50s and 60s that were not news would be news today. We have around-the-clock 24-hour news. In fact, even let guys like me and you have shows. So everything is kind of out there right now. And so it's a lot more scrutiny. If Dr. King were alive today and if he were getting started today, it might be a bit more difficult.
I mean, Mark, you're definitely right that Dr. King has iconic status. I mean, just look at all the streets in his name. Of course, there is the national holiday, and taught in schools. If there's one civil rights leader virtually everybody knows about, it's Dr. King. And you're certainly right about the time, but there were certainly other leaders at that time. I mean, you can talk about Roy Wilkins or John Lewis or James Baldwin or James Farmer. I mean, there's so many lists. Why do you think Dr. King stood out? Was it his speeches? Was it the March on Washington? Was it the Montgomery bus boycott? Was it his, you know, being jailed so many times and writing letters? His eloquence? Was it all of that? I mean,
I think it was all of the above. In fact, I believe that the last thing you said should come first. It was his eloquence and his charisma. When he was hired, when he was called to be the pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, he didn't go right down there. He was only 25 years old, and he didn't go down there and just take over things in Montgomery. As a matter of fact, what happened was Dr. E.D. Nixon, Reverend E.D. Nixon, who was the president of the NAACP at the time, and Rosa Parks was his secretary, by the way, in the NAACP, gathered the ministers, formed the organization, the MIA, the Montgomery Improvement Association, and they said, "We want Dr. King to lead this movement." Well, he felt he was too young himself. He said, "I can't do this. I just got here." And they said, "No, you have a PhD, you're very well spoken, and you can even," they sang to him, "you can even speak in a language that whites will not even understand. They will have to look up to you because you speak even better than they do." And that was pretty much the bottom line. Now, to their credit, E.D. Nixon and the other ministers there, I mean, people in pulpits, you know, I know this as a minister myself, people in leadership oftentimes have their own egos. It was an incredible feat at that time for all of those ministers in Montgomery to get together, Mark, and decide to elect a 25-year-old as their leader who didn't even want to be. I mean, E.D. Nixon could have done it himself. Any number of them could have done it, but they felt that they were too old. They felt they didn't have the charisma. They felt that he could do it credibly. And he was somewhat of an unknown force. When you're in one place for a certain time, you have certain baggage. They felt that him being new, that he could make a difference. So I think that's the first thing we need to point out. It was his charisma. It was his education. It was his eloquence and articulation that thrust him into the leadership. And then after that, subsequent to that, because of the success of the Montgomery bus boycott and other movements that came along, it was hard to ignore. The difference between him, John Lewis, James Farmer, and all the other individuals you name is that Dr. King was articulate. He was well-read, well-educated. He was a scholar. He was an academician. Probably first, if none of this had ever happened, he probably would have been teaching somewhere. He probably would have been one of the great world theologians like Paul Tillich or Martin Buber, people who he studied and understood at Boston Seminary. And so that's what really set him apart. There were theologians in the classroom, but Dr. King was really a theologian in the street, and he had that philosophy. And he was also evolved enough to go to India to study Gandhi and to bring a movement strategy as powerful as nonviolence, tie it in to theology, tie it in to an understanding of God, whatever one's faith was, Christian, Jewish, Muslim. And that's what really made him transcend really mortal status. But
there's so many aspects of his legacy that I want to discuss this hour. Of course, there's the great civil rights battles. There's his role as an icon, not just for African Americans, but really for all humanity, for anyone seeking equal rights. There's, of course, his legacy of nonviolence, and the legacy that's rarely talked about, I think talked about too little with Martin Luther King. And of course, it's helping out the poor.
Right.
We must all remember that he died in Memphis trying to help out a sanitation worker strike, and that part of his legacy, I fear, is too little discussed. Folks, if you want to call in and discuss your thoughts on Martin Luther King Jr., all you have to do is give us a call. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Happy Martin Luther King Day, everyone. We're discussing the life and legacy of Martin Luther King with community activist and longtime radio host and my co-host on Fridays on XM Satellite Radio, the host of Make It Plain, Mark Thompson. Mark Thompson, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, you were talking about, it's very interesting, how Martin Luther King was sort of groomed to be a leader, how here he was at the age of 25, highly educated, but hadn't really led a church or anything like that. One of the things I'm wondering is he grew up in Atlanta, he graduated Atlanta's Morehouse College. How the heck did he get to Montgomery in the first place?
Well, he went to Morehouse, and then he went on to Boston to earn his PhD, and There was an opening in Montgomery, quite simply, and he put in his application. Now, the people.
So he was just applying to be a church leader, not, I mean, to what extent, I mean, when you mentioned, for example, Rosa Parks was there, to what extent was Martin Luther King seen as a groomed to be a greater than the leader of his church, or did that all come out of the Montgomery bus boycott?
Well, I think it primarily came out of Montgomery. He was going to be a pastor, but I think that the thinking was, as, and this is a track many people follow, they pastor and then they ultimately may teach. And I think that's where he was going. He was a scholar. He was a scholar in the pulpit. I don't think that he or anybody else anticipated when he first went there that he would be the real person, the real leader of the modern-day civil rights movement.
So what happened in Montgomery? I mean, Rosa Parks decided not to get up, not to go to the back of the bus like everybody else. How much of this was planned? How much of this was just people getting fed up? And what role specifically did the young Martin Luther King play in the boycott?
Well, again, it was quite cumulative. There had been an ongoing small movement in Montgomery, not very organized, but individuals had been standing up. Rosa Parks was not even the first person to be arrested for what she did. As a matter of fact, it was the second time, the time that we most know about in 1955, that was the second time she was arrested by the same bus driver. See, in Alabama, the law said that if someone violated the law, broke the law on a city bus, the bus driver was automatically deputized to act as a police officer and could arrest that person. This was the second run-in she had with that very same bus driver.
How does a bus driver arrest somebody? I don't even know.
Well, that's what the law. I mean, that was the segregationist law.
No, I understand. I mean, what does he do? Hold on to someone? I mean, I don't even want to think about that.
Well, I don't know. As a matter of fact, they may very well have had handcuffs at the time. I don't know, but I do know that they were able to make an arrest. They were able to prosecute an arrest on the spot, and this was the second time she had a run-in, and on this particular day, it really is mythical when people say that she just happened to be tired and couldn't take it anymore. No, this was the second time she had done it. She was very well aware of the situation. She was an activist herself, and she decided that she was going to do it. And in her capacity as secretary of the NAACP, that brought a level of immediate attention to it. And again, it just so happened that in town, new to the town, was one of the most articulate and well-spoken young preachers of that time, and he was there. You know, it can be said that sometimes leadership, the best leadership is not leadership that one seeks, but leadership that is chosen. And the ministers and the people that chose Dr. King, he didn't go down there to lead that movement. He was chosen. He was reluctant. And I think that's probably also made a difference in his success.
You know, it's just interesting to me that Dr. King is often compared to Moses. I mean, a reluctant prophet, someone who predicted his death at the end, and even, of course, his famous last speech, and we're still talking about his early days, but, of course, his last speech when he says, you know, I've seen the promised land very much, and then, of course, being shot that right after that speech. One of my questions is, back to the early days, Montgomery bus boycott, is how much of, I mean, King was very new at this time, a very young man. How much of that movement began under his leadership, and how much of it was Rosa Parks and some of the leaders before him, and, you know, through his eloquence, he sort of grew up in it? Was he one of the leaders at the very beginning to propose this boycott, or is he someone that sort of took the reins as it was, you know, going into many days?
Well, he was a part of the collective. They first elected him to head the Montgomery Improvement Association, and there, in their leadership, along with others, they mutually agreed that there should be a boycott. It was truly a collective process. That's what made it so successful. Keep in mind, there is no eloquence alone that can make people stop riding the bus and walk to work for 381 days. That is pretty much unprecedented in American history. You won't find that kind of ongoing nonviolent action or any action that's sustained in protest. So it's pretty reasonable to understand that this had been fomenting. This sentiment had been brewing. The only thing that was missing was just the right preacher with just the right voice to tell the people, you can do this, you can see this through, and we can win this battle. Sometimes that's all people need to hear. And once they heard that, they saw that he had no fear and was willing to lead, that made all the difference in the world. But to suggest that he came up with the boycott all his own is not really true. Again, it had been building up, and the other ministers and some of the other individuals and the NAACP were right there, and he arrived on the scene at just the right time.
Now, of course, now he's on the national stage. The Montgomery bus boycott was an amazing just feat of American history, people using their feet to protest some of the poorest and hardest hit of our citizens, you know, literally walking many, many miles rather than be discriminated against. Now, what's interesting that I find is that, of course, not everyone was with Martin Luther King. Not even all African Americans were. One of the most interesting things I learned on Friday on Mark's show was that Dr. Condoleezza Rice's father was one of those preachers that wasn't a big fan of King. Tell us about that, Mark.
Well, Condoleezza Rice grew up in Birmingham, and one of the more controversial campaigns was the Birmingham campaign in 1963 and the infamous Bull Connor. That is where we see all of the videos of the fire hoses, the dogs. Montgomery was about the desegregation of public transportation. The Birmingham campaign was about the desegregation of public facilities. And there was another example, very serious Birmingham movement before Dr. King got there, led by the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, who was a pastor of the 16th Street Baptist Church that was bombed. And when that happened, Dr. King had come in and out of Birmingham. Reverend Shuttlesworth and others let Dr. King know, look, we lead this, we just need your support. And Dr. King was pretty respectful of that, but the difference that was made was that when he came again, it electrified audiences, it electrified the people in Birmingham. And the difference that was made in Birmingham was when the children got involved and were arrested. Well, bottom line is there were preachers in Birmingham, there were whites in Birmingham, all kinds of members of the clergy, who King addressed in his letter from the Birmingham jail that said, Dr. King, go home, you're a troublemaker. One of those individuals was Condoleezza Rice's father. And in a famous Washington Post magazine interview in 2002, when she was a national security advisor, she let it be known that she felt that Dr. King did not need to come to Birmingham, that segregation was on the way out, and if he had not come, it would have ended on his own.
She felt Condoleezza Rice herself said that?
Yes, she did. And she further, it's the Washington Post.
What year are you talking about that she said that?
That she said this in 2002.
2002?
Yes.
That recently?
Yes. And she not only said
wow.
She not only said that, she felt the question that the apparently the reporter asked, it was in the context of whether or not she thought that she owed any of her successes to the civil rights movement, and she said no.
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 Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me because, of course, there's a difference there between Colin Powell, who also worked for the Bush administration. Colin Powell readily admits that affirmative action and the civil rights movement definitely paved the way for his success. Of course, he's no longer with the Bush administration, largely because he was complaining about the way George Bush was prosecuting the war in Iraq. It's interesting to me that Condoleezza Rice has so turned her back on this history. I wonder if you think that most African-Americans today see her in that light. I mean, I certainly have not been a fan of hers just because of her foreign policy, but it's interesting to me. I hadn't realized how severe her rejection of the civil rights movement is, and yet she's often put forward by Republicans as their first black woman candidate for president.
Yes. Well, you know, I don't think she is very similar to Colin Powell, and Colin Powell probably has more respect than she does. But
also, I'm sure
the American community, she's not necessarily seen as her own woman. She's not necessarily seen as a standard bearer, nor as a groundbreaker. She just so happens to be an African American woman who's now Secretary of State, but is a part and parcel of many of the problems that people have with the Bush administration.
Now, going back to Martin Luther King, of course, there was a lot of controversy at the time. It's funny, today it's almost everyone, well, everyone loves Dr. King, but at one point he was even stabbed in Harlem at a book ceremony. What was the animosity all about? Was it people who wanted to just continue segregation, or was there something deeper there?
Now, I lost you for a minute. You said at a Harlem book ceremony?
Yeah, he was stabbed up there, I think, in 1958.
Yeah, well, that was an isolated instance. There was a woman who was mentally disturbed.
Okay,
we
all right.
Really,
so that's a different thing.
But she wasn't acting on behalf of anyone. She had a pretty severe mental disturbance and was very, very isolated. It was never linked or attached to anything else. It was just her acting as an individual.
Now, of course, he was widely attacked by white folk down in the South, and actually in the North as well. Some say that he was mistreated more in Chicago than he was in Alabama. I've lost count of how many times he was physically attacked. He was put in jail, I think, 13, 14, I don't know how many times. What is it about him? Did he... One interesting thing, of course, about all this is that he's thrown in jail again and again and again. He's physically attacked again and again and again. And yet he doesn't respond with violence. He follows in the tradition of Mahatma Gandhi in India and actually decides that the best way to fight back is not with violence. And I want to discuss that with you, Mark. And also with my callers on the line, I know we've got some there. We're going to get to you in just a moment. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder, and say, everything's going to be okay. That place is called America, where we look out for each other and it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King with my guest, Mark Thompson. He is the host of Make It Plain on XM Satellite Radio from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday Eastern Time. That would be 3 to 6 Central, 2 to 5 Mountain, and 1 to 4 Pacific Time, and that's on Channel 169. You really should check that out. One of the things I wanted to discuss, Mark, is that nonviolence is not necessarily what you might think is someone's first response to really horrible oppression. What's interesting to me is that today when we think of the civil rights era, we always think of nonviolence. We think of the very dignified students that sat in at the Five and Dime at Woolworths. So we think of the marches in Selma. But when people are being, you know, beaten with fire hoses and whips and snarling dogs, and you know, it's not necessarily someone's first thought to not respond with violence. I wonder if the legacy of Martin Luther King, the thing that he'll be most remembered for, was taking, you know, beatings, taking, seeing people viciously hurt, being thrown in jail, and responding astoundingly not with violence but with reason. What do you think?
Well, I think that's the other thing that made him exceptional. He was able to convince people that nonviolence was a proper reaction and a more powerful reaction than violence, especially when people were outnumbered, when people were outmanned, when people were outarmed. Violence was not a very reasonable reaction. We don't see any real advances that were made as a result of the riots, as they were called, some of which were going on in the 60s, simultaneous to Dr. King's nonviolent movement. Unfortunately, we live in a society that frowns upon violence when it is a reaction. Now, one might argue that America commits violence every day, that in fact poverty is an act of violence, and in fact it is. But Dr. King was morally right. He was theologically right when he said to everyone that violence for violence doesn't get us anywhere, and it just keeps the bitterness alive. And that's true. I mean, we can see that in our daily lives. We can see that always. We see that in just the way we move about day to day as human beings. But again, I think what made him exceptional, because it is natural. Even you can go to all the nonviolence training you want to, but when someone is beating you, to have
you want to hit
strength,
back.
Yeah, right. You want to hit back. I mean, that's your natural instinct. But what he was able to do was have people who were disciplined enough who would not do that, and help them to understand that their suffering would bring about a greater redemption. That was his very clear interpretation of the New Testament scripture. And I think when we see what happened at that time, that is probably the most visible example of the New Testament scripture being brought into effect. Suffering for righteousness' sake. It is an incredible concept and a superhuman one.
And also, as far as addition to being moral, it was actually a brilliant strategy. I think it's quite fair to say that had there been a violent uprising, there would have been more clamping down by the white power structure in the South, that it was indeed the suffering, it was indeed the nonviolence, it was deemed turning the other cheek that made most of the American white population wake up and see the injustices that were right under their noses, but perhaps which they closed their eyes to, that in many ways, one could say it's ironically, or one could say it's simply just, that the nonviolence had more power than violence itself. Toll-free numbers, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Sarge from Mississippi, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Welcome back. We missed you, pal.
Well, I'm glad to be back from vacation. I'm glad to be here. It's interesting. I know you're from Mississippi. I don't know how old you are, Sarge. Were you old enough to remember some of these conflicts?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. I remember when Kennedy was assassinated. I was in grade school back then.
Do you remember Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964?
Yes, I do. That was a very, very awful time. You know, Philadelphia is not that far from here, and so it was really close by. You know, it really was very close to me. And the way the news was reported on the local channels here, of course, it was reported from against Martin Luther King. You know,
what did they say on the news and on the white channels in the 60s in Mississippi?
They always made it. Tried to make it look like the blacks were stirring up trouble, that they were trying to take over the country and do away with our rights and take our properties and all of this. It, you know, just what you see here from the right wingers today. That's exactly the same talking point.
Kind of misinformation.
Yes. And
well, I didn't mean to interrupt you, though. I'm just curious. So, Sarge, what did you call
into that? I'm glad you asked that, because that's an important question. And it's something that I hadn't even thought about that needs to come out. But, you know, they thrive on the hate. And it's really phenomenal how much hate these people have, and it even goes into the churches. The churches have so much hate.
You're talking about the white churches?
Right.
In Mississippi. Tell me this. Mississippi's always interesting to me. You got Trent Lott, of course. He's still senator there. He's the guy that was just recently praising Strom Thurmond, the segregationist candidate for president. I would think that there may be no state in the country with as much of a racial divide as Mississippi, Sarge. I want to know if you agree with me.
Well, Alabama does. Alabama.
Oh, Alabama. Okay, fair enough. Alabama probably does as well.
They're both running neck and neck, or I'd hate to call it. But see, like, even
fair enough. I don't mean to pick only on Mississippi. Tell me this, though. What do you think is going on today? Do you think we have progress, or do you think we have regress in terms of racial relations in Mississippi?
Oh, there is no doubt it's regress, because I live in an area where right across the street from me I have a black woman and her children, and they are my favorite neighbors. You know, day after Christmas, I took cake over to them. And on the other side, on my next door neighbor is an elderly woman, and she hates me, and she hates the black neighbor across the street, but she's a good Christian. And so, I mean,
well,
you know,
she's a self-proclaimed good Christian. I don't know that I want to call her a good Christian.
Yeah, well, I'm just quoting her, you know. But she's but there's a lot of that, and then the neighbor next door to the black lady, he just hates that there's a black person there, and he just don't even stay at home anymore. He has a second home he goes to. And
Mark, let me ask you. I mean, there's obviously a lot of the legacy of Martin Luther King that's unfulfilled. Sarge is talking about still awful racial relations in Mississippi. What still can be done, needs to be done? What part of his legacy can we take to help some of these current racial problems?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked, because you're seeing what needs to be done, being done through Head On Radio Network, Nova M, and, of course, my site, Unreported News. Like, for instance, Head On Radio has now donated space for Betsy and Cassie to put up their Texas mission, which is really doing good. Betsy and Cassie have really gotten a lot going there. They got a truck set up now and a driver, and they're getting a lot of donations. And this is what we need to do. Martin Luther King preached love, and that's what we've got to show to these people. We've got to show love.
Let me get Mark Thompson's response. Mark, what's your view on this?
Well, I think people's hearts still need to be changed. People have to be willing to change their own hearts and change others. There are those who really want to turn the clock back, who want to retaliate, who want to put things right back the way they were. One of those people, obviously, is Trent Lott, based upon what he said in his speech about Strom Thurmond. The movement that Dr. King started really can't be willy-nilly, and it can't be confined to just a once-a-year celebration or commemoration. It must be ongoing. People have to continue to be willing to fight for justice, to fight for peace. And Sarge, people like yourself even, that not just African-Americans, but people who may, in fact, not be African-American, when they see an injustice being committed, like your neighbor, be willing to confront that, be willing to do that. Say, no, that's not the right way. We're going to do this the right way. That is the wrong way. And as long as people continue to do that, his legacy can remain alive and we can prevent the clock from being turned back.
Yeah, you know, I grew up playing with black children, raised by black maids, and one of the children that I played with was a fellow named Walter Payton. And
oh, really?
And he was my high school classmate, and Walter and I were real good friends. In fact,
really?
I communicated with him a month before his death.
Is that right?
But, you know, Walter, we were the first school in the nation to integrate under court order in 71, you know, when after freedom of choice was taken away and they made it, everybody go to the same schools. We were the first school to open under that. And Walter was the president of John J. Jefferson High School, and he came in, and there was only three major news, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and all of them came, and they were there that day, and they kept trying to stir up anything they could stir up. But
that's interesting to me. The press, well, they were going in, they were like asking tough questions of the white kids and the black kids, saying trying to get them to say hateful things.
They would ask slanted questions. Like, for instance, they asked Walter, what do you think about being forced into these white people's schools where you don't want to be? You know, and
wow.
And don't you want to slash out at them or something like this? But Walter came up with probably, of all the things I've ever heard Walter say, I think this was his greatest moment. But he looked at the reporter and he said, you know, we didn't ask to come here. We were told to come here. We got to be here. The white people got to be here. So the truth is, what difference does it make? We're one now. We've all got to work together to improve things and to make the school work. And so as far as I'm concerned, if you guys will leave us alone, we'll be all right.
Sarge, I want to thank you very much for calling in the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Sarge. Great story.
If you want to join in, there's still some time left. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First,
Your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cents per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
Ready?
Not. Uh-uh.
Ready?
Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready?
But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
No way.
You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not.
Ready.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just a few minutes left talking about the life and legacy of Martin Luther King. We've, of course, talked a lot about his role in the civil rights movement. He is an icon of that movement, but not only of that movement. We talked about his role in nonviolence and promoting that. And one of the things that was very controversial, just a year before he died, had nothing to do with civil rights. Well, maybe it did in a certain way, but nothing directly to do with civil rights, with equal rights, nothing even directly to do with helping the poor, but with ending nonviolence, ending a really stupid war. He came out against the war in Vietnam. As we think about his legacy and we think about the current Iraq war, I think it's instructive to talk about what he did back in 1967. And to discuss that, I have my co-host on Fridays on XM Satellite Radio, the host of Make It Plain on XM, Channel 169, The Power, and my high school buddy from Nashville, Tennessee, Mark Thompson. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
Let me ask you about that 1967 decision to come out against the war in Vietnam. In some ways, at least among civil rights activists, that was one of his most controversial things, wasn't it?
In fact, it's not too well known, Thurgood Marshall spoke out quite a bit against Dr. King for linking the civil rights struggle to the Vietnam War. But it was visionary on Dr. King's part, and it's just something else that I think allows him to transcend to iconic status. It thrust him even more upon the world stage. For most of the 20th century, there was always a debate about whether or not African-American leaders really had a place, or whether or not it was their place to talk about issues of world affairs, or whether they should just be focused on local issues, domestic issues, and what have you. Du Bois really fought that battle and won it. In fact, it was really quite interesting. W.B. Du Bois passed away on the night before the 1963 March on Washington. And that was essentially a passing of the torch. That was acknowledged on the
ball.
That
gives me chills. I didn't realize that.
I
studied W.B. Du Bois.
The very night before, he passed away in Ghana. And Dr. King, of course, had been to Ghana. He was invited to Ghana for the independence celebration in 1957. The movement against colonialism in Africa occurred almost simultaneously with the civil rights movement. But saying all that to say, Dr. King and others always had a world vision. Because, as you said earlier, of his interest in ending poverty, he saw what the war was doing to this country. He also saw how it might affect the poor. The country was not spending its resources to help those most in need. And Dr. King spoke up and said, again, from a largely theological perspective, a lot of people go to seminary, a lot of people study theology and study religion, but then they know the theory, but they don't apply it. Dr. King had the courage to apply it, not just write about it, not just philosophize about it, but to apply it. And he said, war is immorally wrong. And because he said that, because he did that, I think that's just another reason why we have the profound respect we have for him today. And everything he said back then is applicable today with this illegal war we have going on now in Iraq.
It's another war against a country that didn't attack us and a place where we're wasting lots and lots of brave American men and women lives. I do want to focus before we end the broadcast on his work for the poor, not just abroad, of course, but here at home. Here he was in Memphis, and some said that getting involved in a sanitation worker strike was, pardon the pun, was grubby work, was not out there leading the way for equality under the law. But Martin Luther King was involving himself in some local dispute over how much to pay sanitation workers. He was criticized for that, too. Why did he feel it was important to go out there and support these particular sanitation workers in this particular strike?
Well, he was concerned about the least of our sisters and brothers, the least of them. Again, this was a biblical scholar, a New Testament activist, and I believe his conscience told him that it was something that needed to be done. It related directly to the treatment of workers, the treatment of those who were impoverished, and this was going to spark a national campaign to confront and to end poverty. That was his next great campaign. If Dr. King had lived, I think we'd be having a very different discussion now about the economic structure that exists in this country. I think things most definitely would have changed. And Memphis was really going to kick that campaign off and do it. Little did he know, little did we know, that there were traps set for him in Memphis, and that would ultimately be the place where he would meet his demise. There were other traps that had been set. It's now come out. There were other small local campaigns that...
Well, I think they bombed his home 3 times or something, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. But even more than that, it was even in Mississippi. There were several small cities where Dr. King had been invited under the guise of leading a movement, and it turned out that the plan was to assassinate him. It just so happened Memphis was a real campaign. It was a legitimate campaign. And the first real blow to his philosophy of nonviolence was the first march he led, and a riot broke out. We now later know that there were agents provocateur in that march that started all of that, and it was all meant to embarrass Dr. King, to show him that nonviolence was dead and African Americans would no longer follow that philosophy. Convinced that it could be followed, he scheduled another march. Memphis really pulled him in. It became about more than just those sanitation workers. But because of what had happened in the first march, he had to go back to Memphis to prove that nonviolence was still viable, and that African Americans were still willing to follow that strategy. And it was, of course, when he went back for that second march that he was killed.
And, of course, right before that, he gave his last speech, the very powerful, I've been to the mountaintop speech, where he, maybe he doesn't know about the particular trap set for him, but in a prophetic way, he does seem to foretell his own death. We only got about a minute left. Do you think Martin Luther King foresaw that he would be assassinated?
He did. He probably didn't know it would happen the very next day. But there had been so many threats. There had even been meetings with J. Edgar Hoover. He knew that it was imminent. He knew what was going on. And he said in the speech, he'd heard some of the rumors and some of the death threats. He acknowledged them. And that's when he said, it doesn't matter with me anymore because I've been to the mountaintop. So he knew something could happen. He had dodged it a number of times. I think he wanted to prepare himself and us for the inevitable.
I really only got about 30 seconds. Sorry for the tough question in 30 seconds. But what of the legacy of Martin Luther King should we most take and hold true today? What should we remember today in today's America?
Power without love is aggressive. Love without power is sentimental and anemic. We need them both. We need power and we need love.
That's a pretty good sum up. That's why you're a great radio host, Mark, and it's been a pleasure working with you on XM, and it's been a real pleasure having you here on the Inside Scoop. Folks, tune in Wednesday. We're going to be talking about the first 100 hours of what's going on in Congress. I've got a Republican on the air who thinks that what the House is doing is extreme. As usual, this person is way in the minority, as the great majority of Americans support what the Democrats are doing. My thanks to Mark Thompson for coming on here, for giving us terrific insight into the life and legacy of Martin Luther King. Do us a favor, folks. Go out into your own community. Celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. King. Do something good for your community. I know Sarge in Mississippi has been very active working to help Katrina victims. That's him. That's his community. That's awesome. we all know the problems in our own communities. Let's get out and do something for our communities and celebrate this Martin Luther King Day. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in every day, 2 to 3 p.m. This is Mark Levine signing off.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, folks, Guy James here with you, along with Billy Shears, our music director. Glad to have all of you along with us today. A very sad day in the Guy James Show area here. Very sad. And if you watch this or listen to the show all the time, I'm sure you know why. My beloved Buckeyes were absolutely killed by the Florida Gators last night. And I just want to say, get this over with. Congratulations to the Florida Gators and all their fans. I think most of we OSU fans know we were absolutely taken to the woodshed last night by a superior team. They dominated the game both offensively and defensively, and are very, very deserving of the national championship. So, frankly, I'm embarrassed at the outcome. However, I love my Buckeyes, and my support for them never wanes. We'll be back. We'll be back to fight another day. But, again, congrats to the Florida Gators. Great game last night, and in all candor, they're a far superior team to the OSU Buckeyes. That's my feeling, and believe me, I don't believe I've ever said that ever in my football fandom life. I don't think I've said it, but it was apparent to me last night. So anyway, we get that over with. And secondly, I want to make it very clear. I want to clear something up that during a conversation last week concerning Nancy Pelosi, I didn't quite make it clear that Nancy did not vote for the IWR, the Iraq War Resolution. I just wanted to clear that up in case anyone misunderstood my position. It's my fault that I didn't make it completely clear. And some news in the talk radio arena, a couple of things I wanted to mention. A friend of ours, Maria Levy, who always heads up a lot of the Radio Row events in Washington for the progressive movement, passed away last Wednesday, I believe it was. And what a shame. Maria, a very hard worker, totally dedicated to the cause, didn't make a lot of money doing what she did. She was just glad to do it. And we're going to miss Maria Levy. Everybody in the liberal talk radio arena will miss her. And also, Sharon Harrison, now wife of Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine, passed away very recently as well. And so we want to pass on our condolences to them. I hope you're ready for a good show today. See, the chat room is somewhat quiet today. Maybe everybody's in the same kind of a mood I am today. I should have just brought a bottle. Sounds like I've already bought a bottle of wine in. Should have just brought a bottle in. I should have bought that bottle of champagne I had on ice last night for the victory celebration. Oh, man. I feel bad today over that. I do. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. It really is. I don't know, a lot of you are saying, oh, football, what foolishness. Well, hey, if you're a competitor, and you and I have been a competitor all my life, and I always play to win, no matter what it is, whether it's talk radio or my business life or my sporting life or whatever it is, I always play to win. And so that's why we get upset over things like that. We like to win, 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 win. I'll never forget my high school basketball coach standing in our high school basketball banquet at the end of the season. And it may sound strange to you, but it is not to me that I could not have gotten a higher compliment from my beloved high school basketball coach when he took us, you know, up on the stage one by one and talked about the attributes of each one of the players on the team. He looked at me and he said, you know, This one here hates to lose more than anybody I've ever known. And I like that. And Coach and I were exactly alike in that respect. I hate to lose. Hate it, hate it, hate it. Because of the coach always said, you show me a good loser, and I'll show you that just that, a loser. And I've always agreed with him. Although I'm trying to be a good loser today, although there are tears running down my cheeks here in the studio. Oh, God. But anyway, the show must go on. And in that spirit, we will try and persevere today. We will try and get through it, even though we're suffering great sorrow. As I'm sitting here looking at my Woody Hayes bobble doll over there on the filing cabinet, Woody looks somewhat perplexed, as we all did about halfway through. Okay, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Maybe I will later. It's kind of hard not to today. Hey, you know, the Bush people fought so hard, just in a few little asides here, the Bush people fought so hard to keep from letting anybody know they had any association whatsoever with Jack Abramoff. You remember that? They denied knowing him, didn't know him at all, and they did everything they could.